to session number 5 of New Religious Movements in America. Today we're going to do 3 things. I'm going to give you a thumbnail sketch of Reconstructionism. Not because it has anything to do with the New Age, which I promise we do, and that's what we'll do second, but because it's an important, though little known, movement. And it's something that I think you'll be interested to know about, maybe even be alarmed about. I am. And the third thing we'll do is I'm going to pass around a copy of a taxonomy of the 17 families of faith in this country by J. Gordon Melton from UC Santa Barbara. Reconstructionism is a post-millennialist movement. It's a new form of post-millennialism. Remember that the post-millennialists think that we're already in the millennial age and that there are things that Christians can do to prepare for the coming of Christ at the end of that age. That's post-millennialism. These people come out of the Reform tradition, and that means that they're very concerned with the laws that one finds in the Bible. The progenitor of this movement began writing in the 30s and 40s and on into the 50s. His name is Rusas J. Rushduni. Rushduni's point basically is that to prepare for the coming of Christ and to create the millennial kingdom that will usher in the return of Christ, one must transform America or reconstruct American society along the bases of the Bible, particularly the laws found in the Hebrew Bible. Another figure is Gary North, and there are 3 or 4 others who are, when you read Reconstructionist stuff, you see their names again and again. 2 other names for this are theonomy and dominion theology. And in a second I'll read an excerpt from that. But here's, give me that old-time theonomy. Now, theonomy carries with it the idea of the nomos of theos. God's law ought to be the law of the land. Reconstructionists think that America is a fine place, but it needs to be reconstructed along Christian lines. In a reconstructed America, only Christians will hold office. Only Christians are fit to be the rulers. And here, under Reconstructionism, capital punishment will be instituted for a number of crimes, including bestiality and adultery. Here is from Revival Review, Stillwater's Revival Books from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. So this is not just a U.S. movement. And by the way, I mean, first you reconstruct the United States and Canada, and then eventually you reconstruct the government of the entire world along Christian lines. And then Christ will come. This is from the 17th century. So, I mean, I'm talking about Rushduni in the 40s and 50s, but he goes back to Calvinist writers of the Reformation. A second argument we have from diverse laudable examples in the Old Testament. Moses drew the sword against idolaters. The children of Israel resolved to go out to war against the Reubenites and Gadites when they understood that they were building another altar. Elijah commanded to slay the priests of Baal. In Asa's time, there was a covenant for putting to death such as would not seek the Lord God of their fathers. Nebuchadnezzar, although a heathen, being convinced that there was no God like the God of Israel, made a decree that whosoever speaketh blasphemy or uttereth any error against God shall be cut in pieces and their houses made a dunghill. Here are some of the tenets of reconstructionism. Truth is not subject to historical or scientific investigation. These people are foundationalists. Now, not all philosophical foundationalists are reconstructionists. Can you follow this? Foundationalism means that there are some truths or some axioms which are simply revealed, or which people simply stumble upon. Well, here they are. I didn't manufacture them. They're not a product of my mind or my creativity. They are given. There are certain givens. And you can't prove them. You just accept them and then build your philosophy on them as foundational principles. Now, there are many philosophers who will question that today, question the idea that there are any truths, so-called, that are not manufactured out of human creativity. But theonomists or dominion theologians or reconstructionists are foundationalists. There are truths that are not subject to historical or scientific investigation. Biblical revelation, then, is simply given by God, and we go from there. Number two, the Hebrew Bible carries in it exhaustive and minute detail in terms of the construction of a society. This is Calvinism with teeth. The laws of the land reflect the mind of God, so that what is a sin is also a crime. As I said, the death penalty would be invoked for a range of offenses that are found, as we heard our 17th century friend say, in the Hebrew Bible. This would include homosexuality. So a reconstructed America would not be a friendly place for gays and lesbians. The Puritan Sabbath would be reinstituted. And severe punishment would be meted out to those who broke the Sabbath, who worked on Sunday, or who didn't attend church. The country would go back on the gold standard. There would be no banks. Christians would oversee all aspects of life. There would be no property tax. Well, maybe you like some of those. We have a Reconstructionist church in town, in Pullman, Living Faith Fellowship, which is a totalist group. And if this isn't totalism, I don't know what is. As far as I know, there are groups which are Reconstructionist in orientation, but I don't think there's a central post office box to which you send your money if this excites you. I don't think there's a Reconstructionism central, but there are groups, and I notice in the brochure of Living Faith Fellowship, it says, among their other affiliations, we are affiliated with groups who are committed to Reconstructionism. And then it lists two or three other groups. Okay, that's pretty much my limit of knowledge on Reconstructionism, but anybody want to make a comment or ask a question about that?
Do we know any familiar names associated with that?
I don't think you do. I mean, if you don't know the name Rush Dooney, that's the most famous name. You don't get famouser than Rush Dooney. So, actually my point in bringing this up is not that it's widespread, and not that it would be attractive, I think, to anybody here, but it's there. And it's something that, well, for example, everybody in Pullman and Moscow, in my area, knows about Living Faith Fellowship. They know that it's a totalist place, and they know that their WSU students and U of I students go there and drop out of school, don't pursue graduate degrees, stay in Poland and Moscow, work for the church, blah, blah, blah. In other words, they know it as a high-intensity, totalist, authoritarian, male-dominated, et cetera, group. But if you say, well, they're also Reconstructionists, I think even a lot of checked-out people would say, well, what's that? But, they are committed to the reconstruction of American society along biblical lines. And I think that that's something that we ought to be aware of. Now that you know it, even though it isn't, I agree, you know, it's not a widespread thing with superstar people. It's still something that is believed in by very smart, very serious, and very committed, and very organized people. Yeah, Walt.
Is that close to posse comitatus or something like that, or is it not?
I would say some of their ideas overlap, but their techniques are different. Reconstructionists, because they're postmillennialists, are not desperate.
I see.
They are fully confident that this is the wave of the future.
They don't store up guns and all that stuff?
No, uh-uh. They're your friends and neighbors.
Okay.
At least they're your neighbors. the posse, you know, the posse comitatus, if they're Christians at all, and if they think about their millennial leanings, are probably premillennials. You know, destruction is about to come on the world because of the wrath of God and the perfidy of humans. And now we, the remnant, have to arm ourselves against those who will try to destroy us because they're evil and they will rise up against the true white Christian minority. So there's a big difference in outlook and attitude between the post-millennials. They're positive. They're optimistic that this thing is going to come off. And the premillennialists, who are pessimistic. Dan, you were going to say?
You know, aren't a lot of their ideas part of the religious right? I mean, not as extreme, but you know, remaking America and Christian lines. And
absolutely. And it just occurs to me as you say that Reconstructionists are to fundamentalists as fundamentalists are to evangelicals.
Yeah, system war.
It's cranked up. Yeah. In other words, fundamentalists will say to evangelicals, pull up your socks. It's my tennis partner. When we're behind. Pull up your socks. You know, get your nerve up and fight. Don't just say the truth. Denounce falsehood. You know, get with the program. Christianity is under fire. Don't you realize that? You can't just live your conservative Christian life. You have to fight and contend for the faith. That's one of the fundamental differences between the broad evangelicalism of your friends and neighbors. I'm sure your friends. And fundamentals. And same is true in the far right. You know, the Reconstructionists would say to the fundamentalists, well, you're well on your way, but you've got to drop your premillennialism, because a lot of fundamentalists are premillennialists. They'll point out all the evils of society and say the remnant of God should try to save as many as possible and bring them into the remnant of God, because at a certain point, Christ is going to come, rapture the righteous, and destroy the wicked. As God reportedly said to Dwight L. Moody, the world is a sinking ship, and I've given you a life raft, Moody, save all you can. That was his motto, say, save all you can. So drop the premillennialism, realize that God is working through us, through our Reconstructionist organizations, to make the world safe for Christians, make the world a Christian place. Yeah, good analogy. Okay, anybody else on such matters? Second thing is New Age. First thing to say is, we should have had this conversation about 1987, because that's when Time Magazine, when was it, December 1987, had on its cover a New Age theme. I can't remember what it was, but the title of it was New Age Harmonies. And I get the sense that New Age, qua New Age, peaked around 1987. Qua New Age meaning something that people were beginning to find out about, and we're talking a lot about as New Age itself. Okay? Another indication that that's the case is that I read not too long ago in Martin Marty's Context newsletter of a survey of booksellers, and they were reporting that fewer and fewer people were asking specifically for New Age material. And that what the booksellers were doing in response was taking the New Age books, taking the title New Age off the shelf, and putting that self in mysticism, psychological self-help, religion, occult, etc. categories. And I think that that tells you something about New Age. New Age is an amorphous movement. Now, it is a movement. There are recognized stars, like Starhawk, and other people that whose names circulate all the time in quote New Age circles. But it's amorphous in the sense that there's nobody that is manning the phone or personing the phone at New Age Central, just like Reconstructionism. What I think you want to think about in terms of the New Age is its pervasiveness. There's nobody in this room that hasn't been touched by the New Age in some way. Everybody knows somebody that believes in reincarnation. Everybody knows something who has gone into a New Age bookstore and at least considered buying a crystal. Everybody knows somebody who's used a Ouija board, tarot cards, etc. I mean, you all have contact, and some of you actually in this room may entertain ideas that could be associated with the New Age. Ted Peters from Pacific Lutheran Theological Seminary has done a lot of work on New Age, and one of the things that he wants to say to people, and I would second him on this, is that because the New Age is such an amorphous concept, and because there are so many ideas associated with the New Age, there must be some good ones in there. It's not all totally bad. So rather than saying, I hate the New Age people are crazy, you know, or, well, I guess Christianity washed up on the beach and now this is the New Age thing. Both of those, I think, are wrong. Check each idea out as it comes, you know, and your wife was telling me she does yoga. Well, you know, that's wonderful. A lot of people do yoga. Well, you can associate yoga with the New Age. All right? It's an old thing, and that's precisely what I'm going to get into right now. The background to the New Age isn't that this is going to seem manipulative, but the background to the New Age is the alternative reality tradition. What is the alternative reality tradition alternate to? The majority reality tradition. What is the majority reality tradition? That is that there's a dualism operating in reality. I am I and you are you, and there's a strict separation between I and you. Therefore, there's a strict separation between God and the world. Things are not connected. If they're going to be connected, they have to be connected by a third thing. For example, you and I, if we're going to be connected, have to be connected by language or by physical force. You toppling me over, or tapping me on the shoulder, right? Or writing me a letter, or phoning me, or sending me a fax. Now, that's the majority reality tradition. Who would dispute that? I mean, you know, if one of your friends said, well, I'll get in touch with you tomorrow morning. And, you know, the person didn't fax, didn't phone, didn't fall by my office. You know, by noon, I would either think, well, there's been a misunderstanding, or the person has dropped dead. You know, or they forgot. Yeah. But what if that person meant, I will psychically get in contact with you? Well, you may say, well, this is a New Age weirdo, you know? But in the alternative reality tradition, that is precisely what is being said. That contact between entities can be made on a basis other than the physical. In the majority reality tradition, which comes to us, as I put on the board a few days ago, which I'm not supposed to say here, Descartes, 400 years ago, I think, therefore I am. Or I fish, therefore I am. That's what Daniel says. In other words, I'm an isolate individual, cut off, and can be myself cut off from the world. And that has been the majority reality tradition, well, since the Greeks, but certainly focused by Descartes. The alternative reality tradition has always been there underneath the majority tradition, and the alternative reality tradition suggests that influence can happen at a distance. And that's one of the key ideas of the alternative reality tradition, and it is one of the key ideas of the New Age. The majority reality tradition says things are disconnected, and if they're going to be connected, they've got to be connected physically, by phone, fax, by visit, by language. The alternative reality tradition says, no, at the bottom of reality is not separation, but linkage. We are all linked together. And that includes other things in the universe, like rocks, trees, plants, and animals. So that in the alternative reality tradition, you talk about both and. In the majority reality tradition, you talk about either or. Either human or non-human. In the alternative reality tradition, you talk about a spectrum or continuity. I would say in the majority traditions, very easy to talk about normal, abnormal, heterosexual, homosexual. Very natural to talk that way. In the alternative reality tradition, there's a question mark by that. Is it that dichotomous? Are things simply dualistic? Self-world. God world. Now, I am not advocating for the alternative reality tradition over the majority tradition. Let's not be dualistic. Let's not be either or here. You know, let's take the goodies from wherever we can find them. What I'm saying is that for centuries there's been an alternative to the dualistic no influence at a distance, traditional understanding of the way things work. If we move that story into the 19th century in America and ask ourselves, when did New Age thinking arise out of this alternative reality tradition that's been there for centuries? I would point to the 1860s. In the 1860s, you get the rise of Christian Science with Mary Baker Eddy. Now, there is a New Age type of healing. Because the Old Age, or the majority reality tradition, says that you have to have somebody come in and give you something like a pill or invasively carve you up or manipulate you if you're a chiropractor, do something to you to make you better, right? You can't have the physician sitting in his office and you at home and sort of, you know, think about each other. The physician, they made house calls in those days, you know. The physician had to come to your house and do, you know, feel you and do something to you in order to heal you, right? That's the majority tradition. Mary Baker Eddy said, out of the alternative reality tradition, no, that's not it at all. You can yourself get in contact with the Spirit of Christ. And you can change your mind, and then you will change your circumstances. You can change your mind, which thinks a disease is real. You can change your mind to think that disease is an illusion, because God doesn't sponsor illusions. God sponsors truth, and God is the sponsor of health. And you can do that yourself out of your subjectivity. You don't need another party. Now, you might have a Christian Science practitioner helping you do that, but you yourself are responsible for healing. That's the alternative reality tradition. And that's very much in the spirit of the New Age. Were you going to make a comment?
Yeah, well, one thing that, I mean, by saying it started in 1860, it seems sort of to ignore some of the subculture influences. You certainly see in the South is the Makumba and a lot of African things coming in through the slave culture that then became more ingrained as there was a back and forth with the Haitian culture. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of the voodoo stuff in South Florida, and that's always been there. It's just somehow gotten more visible as things have gotten more integrated.
Right, good point. I don't disagree with that at all. And a basic New Age move is to take truth where you find it. Yeah, so absolutely. I guess I'm talking about public visible media sponsored, you know, where you could read about it if you were somebody in Chicago reading the paper. You read about Christian Science.
Yeah, yeah, although I think that again reflects that the white world has been dominating the media.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm talking about the most here, not obscure. You know, I mean, it's all around, and I'm tracing it back centuries, really. And so you're right. I don't disagree at all. But if I would pick a movement that caught the attention of more people than the few who knew about Makumba and stuff like that, I would pick Christian Science, and I would also pick the Fox Sisters in Hydeville, New York. Anybody know the Fox Sisters? Know other Fox Sisters? They lived in their parents' house in Hydeville, New York in the 1850s. I have a volume, by the way, in my room by who is it? Anyway, I think it's Gaustad. It's a history of religion in the United States in one volume, and it doesn't. I'll look this up. So I look up Fox Sisters. No Fox Sisters. They can talk about religion in the United States without mentioning Fox Sisters. I couldn't believe it. Well, you're saying, well, I can think about religion in America and not think about the Fox Sisters at all. In fact, I've never thought of the Fox Sisters. Well, here they are in upstate New York, huh? It all comes from there, right? And at one point, they realize, they know that the house in which they are living is a house in which somebody was murdered. And one dark and stormy night, they hear. Are you coming from the basement? Yeah. Yeah. Rappings. And they interpret this as the spirit of that murdered, I think it was a murdered sailor or something like that, attempting to communicate with them. Now, cynics point out that it was around this time that Morse but they were convinced that the spirit was, the spirit world was in contact with the material world. And you see, one of the New Age tenets, one of the tenets of the alternative reality tradition is that the barriers are porous. See? The barriers between God and the world are porous. The barriers between you and I are porous. and the barriers between the either you're dead or alive. Well, that's in the majority tradition, right? Huh? Alternative reality tradition. There are those, you know, who are in a quote live state, and there are the quote dead state. But who's to say that there's this barrier between them? See? So by various methods, one can attend to the spirit world. Now, is this any different from channeling? Is this any different from UFO friendly folks from outer space coming in techno garb to help us? So one of the key features of a lot of these groups that you might associate with the New Age or new religious movements in America is this idea that there are persons or entities or beings who have advanced farther than we on the path of knowledge and are benevolent enough to contact us, lead us, help us, guide us. Once you've got that central notion, you've got a lot of it. A mania of spiritualism gripped the country. Even Lincoln was interested in this stuff. Not for long. But it was so strong that it couldn't, he couldn't help but pay attention to it. Congressmen, senators, ministers, mainline ministers, hundreds and thousands of people got involved in spiritualism. People were popping up all over doing seances. People were really interested in what Grandpa had to say, you know, about the present. Well, the point I'm making structurally here and for your further investigation is dynamically or structurally, whether it's Grandpa or Ramtha or a space cadet, you know, a little yellow man that comes off, or E.T., it's sort of the same idea, isn't it? That those beyond us, more advanced, can come back and help us. Yeah?
How is the assumption made that they are more advanced than we?
I can't answer that. How? It's simply a tenet of this kind of thinking. Yeah.
Like we always think of people from Mars are so much more intelligent than we are.
Mm-hmm. All I can say is it's a tradition of thinking. That in this tradition of thinking that goes way back, the assumption is always that they're advanced. It's never, see, it's these movements are very optimistic. So maybe it arises out of the natural optimism of the human creature. I mean, there are pessimistic traditions, aren't they? Calvinism is pretty pessimistic, you know, total depravity of humans.
They're coming to us, we're not going to them, which would make them superior.
Yeah, well, they're
But then, you know, I've heard where, speculatively speaking, the end of the world comes and we have no place to go, but maybe the rocket programs will say that we'll go to some planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, it's long-term optimism, maybe short-term pessimism, long-term optimism, which is Christian.
I think that when people don't understand something, they think they're superior or they're different, but it's a lot of things are just misunderstanding or just not understanding.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I guess how, since it seems to be very vague, how does it qualify to be called a religion? Is there a supreme being? Is there a what makes it a religion?
Spiritualism?
No, this New Age whole thing. When they call it a religion, what is
what? Well, I guess it depends on who the they are that are calling it a religion. A lot of people that are involved in New Age type movements would not take the religious label at all.
That's
or they would take it happily but untraditionally. Mm-hmm. they would say, yes, we are addressing some of the issues that traditional religions address, but in our own fashion. And I think that individualism is very strong in the New Age movement. That's not to disavow the notion that people should get together and help one another. So, you know, in that sense, it's very good. It emphasizes the individual and yet the necessity of a group, whether it be a 12-step group or a, you know, support group or an inquiry group, a study group, a meditating group. We help each other, yeah. But you are the final authority. You are the one who makes meaning for yourself. So in that sense, it is a religion. It gives a direction and focus in life. And that's a pretty wimpo definition of religion, but I think it's a pretty good working definition of a religion. And it doesn't require supreme beings. Lots of people would want to see various ideologies like Marxism as functioning as religions. Yeah. But so I think we should sort of hang loose with the idea of religion and not find it necessarily where it isn't, you know, but not be afraid to say, well, this sounds pretty religious, and yeah. Spiritualism is a definite religion. There are spiritualist societies and churches in major cities around the country. Again, when you know, travel and get to the motel, before you turn the TV on, look at the churches in the Yellow Pages and see if you can find some of these groups. There are spiritualist churches and spiritualist ministers. They have services, they sing hymns, they pray to God, but the central focus of spiritualist churches is the counseling session / seance that happens between the spiritualist minister and the person coming to them for advice. Yeah.
That sounds very close to secular humanism to me. Can you, where does that fit into the picture?
I would say that secular humanists may or may not be attracted to New Age ideas and practices. I would see them as rather separate. New Age is a congeries of philosophies and techniques of holistic growth. Take that, tape. It's a great definition of New Age. Especially if people know what congeries is. You know, it's a big bag of self-help and self-advancement ideas and techniques. All right? Secular humanism is a philosophy that kind of gets its energy by being not Christian, not Jewish. So it's almost like comparing apples and oranges in my way of thinking. Secular humanism says humanity is the ultimate giver of value and manufacturer of value. Therefore, what works against the human prospect is bad, and what works for it is good. One of the things that works against it on balance is religion. Bertrand Russell said that. Why I'm not a Christian. One of the things is, on balance, religion has been deleterious to the human prospect rather than ameliorative or helpful. So let us cast aside religious responses to our problems, recognize that we alone are the manufacturers of our own salvation and destiny, and get, you know, roll up the sleeves, pull up the socks, and get to work.
So then a secular humanist would be one who is an agnostic or an atheist?
Yeah. I mean, by definition, if you describe yourself as a humanist, you may or may not be a theist. But if you describe yourself as a secular humanist, you are saying that here's now and here's then. Let's not attack the problems of now by importing ideas from then, that is, from the sacred realm. There's a lot of anti-clericalism in this, you know. I am the ordained person and I'll tell you what to do. Wait, humanists say, let's just eliminate this for lots of reasons. you know, I'm not giving the reasons, but for many reasons, let's eliminate the them, concentrate not on the age to come, but on this cycle, on this cyclum, on this age. Cyclum means age or epoch, and that's where you get the word secular. It's in opposition to the then. It means now. We've got ecological problems, and some of these dingbats here on the secular humanist. Some of these dingbats are saying, "Well, Jesus is coming soon, you know, so we don't have to save the redwoods, and we can leave the tailings. We don't need Superfund. We don't need greens, you know. All we need is faith in Jesus." Well, secular humanists will say, "That's stupid. You know, that's daft. We've got so many problems in this cyclum. We need to address them now, not sort of wait around till somebody else comes and rescues us." So it's a philosophy, and New Age is a big bag of stuff. Okay, others that want to come in?
Well, okay, I just wanted to know whether channeling is brand new, in fact, or is that
That's pretty new. Yeah. The grandfather and grandmother phenomenon of that is the unidentified flying objects movement, which peaked around 1960. But if you eliminate the technology, you still get the divine beings. They're just not coming in hardware. Here the divine beings are coming in hardware. In channeling, they're coming without the hardware. But it's the same type of being with the same message. Get with the program, you know, be good, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
New Age thinking is almost always pantheistic, too, that nature is God.
Yes.
And also as I am God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to get to some of the features.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. That's as we always run out of time. Yeah.
In some ways, UFOs just sort of relate the cultural context of things. There were no reported UFOs until 1947.
Yeah. One commentator, the one who fixes the date at 1960, and I'm not remembering the name of the commentator, but he says the decline of the UFO cult popularity and visibility in the media coincides with the public's disenchantment with technological fixes. That is, you know, you have a tremendous buildup of a sort of the worship of technology. World War II and after World War II, you know, when America just goes bonkers with technology. Sputnik, you know, we remember the reaction to that and the real concentration on science and technology. And it evoked, according to this commentator, in the public a kind of romantic hope that technology would solve our problems. So here are people coming from a technologically superior plane to help us. All right. Now you eliminate the technology and with channeling, but the people are still superior. Yeah. But they're spiritual. See, they're not technologically superior necessarily. I mean, that's not even very important. And see, neo-paganism is a part of the New Age movement also. Neo-paganism says the problem with modern life is not too little technology or not good enough technology, it's technology itself. So neo-paganism is a kind of criticism of contemporary science-based technology society along the lines of a kind of Luddite naturalism. Get back to nature. Go out in the woods. Go to Holden Village. If you can escape the tailings, you know, and go out and dance around the teepee. Get in touch with your primordial roots. You know, these gods and goddesses of Northern Europe were great. You know, they released the creative energies of people. They didn't put people down. They didn't say you're originally sinful. You're originally great. As Daniel says, you know, you're a god. You can do whatever you want to. Expand your spiritual horizons and physical limitations to the nth degree. So the New Age is very optimistic. Okay, I quickly say, in terms of background to New Age, you have Madame Blavatsky. Around the turn of the century, she died in 1910, I think, 1905 or 1910, but around the turn of the century, Blavatsky, who had developed an interest in Eastern philosophy, especially Vedanta Hinduism, goes to India and with her companion, General Olcott, and notices that there's a tremendous decline in India of the latter part of the 19th century in Hindu practice. And Blavatsky said, what's going on here? You guys aren't practicing Hinduism. Hinduism is the greatest thing that ever was since sliced bread. No one has ever been able to tell me what the thing before sliced bread was. The greatest thing. And Blavatsky was actually responsible for a revitalization of Hinduism within the mother country itself. She establishes a theosophical society in India, brings that back, establishes theosophical societies in this country, thereby paving the way for some New Age ideas, because New Age people generally have an allergy to the West and to Western ways of thinking, like medicine, the disease model of sickness and Western medicine. It's almost that anything Western is bad, anything Eastern is good. So it's definitely a turn East. Well, this didn't happen 2 years ago or 1987. It happened already with Blavatsky in the latter part of the 19th century. She's Russian, by the way. Came to the U.S. from Russia. Then, extremely quickly, there have always been circles in this country for a long time that practice magic, that use Ouija boards. Remember, you know, some of you were there in the 20s when Ouija boards were big things. Palm readings, crystal balls, tarot cards, astrology. Notice how that fits into the alternative reality tradition. That which is happening somewhere else when you are born has an effect on the rest of your life, has an effect on who you are. Well, hoo-ha. In the majority reality tradition, see, because there's not a direct connection between you and the stars. Of course it happens in the alternative reality tradition, because you don't need that physical bridge. You don't need that third thing to connect you and the stars. Everything affects everything else. Occult groups have always been around, since anyone can remember. Rosicrucianism gets started in the late 19th century in this country, and there are at least two largish Rosicrucian groups operating in this country today. So before anybody talked about New Age, if they wanted to, they could find some weird person down there on Maple Street, you know, who darkened her window, pulled the curtains, and looked in crystal balls, or had little seances for her friends from the PTA.
They could tell when it was snowing by just raising.
That's true. Now, where I would date the beginning of New Age movement, qua New Age movement, would be with the humanistic psychology movement in the 60s. The humanistic psychology movement arose in opposition to the medical model of psychology, where you assume people are sick and then you try to make them healthy. Guy came to a psychiatrist and poured out all his troubles and said all the strange things he did. The psychiatrist looked at him and said, "You're crazy!" The guy said, "I want a second opinion." The psychiatrist says, "You're ugly too." So humanistic psychology develops in opposition to this kind of assumption of sickness. Humanistic psychology, transpersonal psychology, holistic psychology emphasizes the idea that you yourself can make yourself better. You don't need necessarily drugs and pills and stuff like that, but by calling on the inner reserves of your own essential healthy nature, or ratcheted up a little bit, your own divine nature, you can not only heal yourself of your abusive codependent past, but you can go way beyond just sort of healthy stasis. You can become a god. You can create, you can make, you can change your environment in ways that you never thought possible. Believe in yourself. Discipline yourself. Let the creative child out of you. I mean, this all sounds like, well, what's new? Well, it is fairly new. You know, people didn't talk like that in the 40s. They didn't talk like that in the 50s. But lots and lots of people who went to lots and lots of humanistic psychology seminars talk like that and talk like that today. So I would say this emphasis on holism, emphasis on not only health but on mega health, super health, the emphasis on laity. It's not the mumbo jumbo shaman psychiatrist that knows everything. The psychiatrist may be able to help you, but you are your healer. You are the goddess. You are the one that takes charge. You're the expert. You ever heard anybody in 1943, when I was born, say, listen to your body? What if somebody said that to my mother? Listen to your body.
She'd hear what you're thinking
about. Yeah, stethoscope. Well, we're almost out of time. So let me do two things. One, ask you if you have comments and questions, and I'll do three things. I'm going to read this real fast so we get this on the tape. These are the fundamental ideas of the New Age, most of which I've sort of tossed off already, but let me make sure that we've got them. The idea of ultimate reality is this: all is one, non-dualism, i.e., in conformity with the alternative reality tradition. Shirley MacLaine said, you and I and everyone is God. There is no sort of person out there or force out there. Nature is God, the rocks are God, the chipmunks are God, we are all God. Humanity, you create your own reality. You have unlimited potential. Don't sell yourself short. In direct opposition to the idea of limitation, of decay, of original sin. God is everything. There's no deity over against the universe. One talks in religious terms about principles or a principle, about a life force, about cosmic consciousness as being the ultimate reality, rather than some being over against the universe. That's dualism, that's the West, that's Augustine, that's traditional Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Who is Jesus? Jesus, of course, is an example of the enlightened master. He is not unique. Reincarnation surfaces again and again in New Age circles. Sin is blindness, as it is in the East. It's not some kind of fundamental misorientation as it is in the West, but it is blindness to the truth. It is being fragmented rather than whole, rather than integrated, so that the problem needs the solution of knowledge. And that's why a lot of people on the right call people in the New Age movement on the left Gnostics, because the Gnostic solution to the problem of humanity, the deep fundamental problem, is not new being or transformation as we think about it, or forgiveness in terms of the Christian faith, but knowledge. So we use techniques to realize our higher self. Techniques, yoga, meditation, guided imagery, macrobiotic diets, martial arts, etc. means, many means, to that one end of full knowledge of self, integration of all our stories and all of our experiences, and then the releasing of energy and creativity. Goals of the movement, if there are any goals of this amorphous movement, world peace, ecological balance, androgyny, majority reality tradition, men and women. Alternative reality tradition, Tate probably didn't get the subtlety. Natural foods, healing, holistic healing, and the humanization of technology. Okay, let me pass this out. Pass it out even if you don't let me. Taxonomy, or typology, of religious groups in the United States. And I'll just mention them for the tape, which may still be running, and then we eat at one, so we can stay for a few minutes if you'd like to. After I read these, then we'll say this session is holistically concluded. These are the 17 distinct families. Gordon is saying that if you know these families, you can fit any group that anybody throws at you at a cocktail party or a macrobiotic fruit juice party, and you can fit the group into one of these families. Well, let's say, well, have you ever heard of Exon? Oh, that's an Eastern mystic group. Liturgical West, Liturgical East, Lutheran is a distinct family. Reformed Presbyterian, that comes from Calvinism. Liberal, those that would be the Unitarians that we talked about. Pietist Methodist. Pietism comes before Methodism because Wesley, when he was thinking about becoming a Methodist or inventing Methodism, met some Moravian brethren on the ship coming over to his disastrous 2 years in America and was influenced by Pietism. Holiness is a movement that emphasizes the action of the Spirit in one's life toward perfection. Perfectionism is also part of the Wesleyan tradition, so there might be some blurring of lines between Pietist, Methodist, and holiness. Many holiness groups also speak in tongues. And that brings us to the next one, Pentecostal. Tongue-speaking groups, the largest and oldest of which is the Assemblies of God in this country, which comes from the Azusa Street Revival of 1906 in Los Angeles. Originally, Black and White Together at Azusa Street, and then after that, the Black Pentecostals went one way into the Church of God in Christ, Kojic. You see them all over the Black world. A lot of them are little sort of storefront things with a sign, you know, Church of God in Christ. That comes from that Azusa Street Revival, and then some of the more, some of the white groups are Assemblies of God, etc. European Free Church, Amish, Mennonites, Church of the Brethren, the historic peace groups, come-outers. That is a big distinction between inside and outside church and world. Be as different from the surrounding culture as possible. Baptists, that comes from the Radical Reformation, emphasis on decision, immersion baptism, no pedo-baptism. Could you get arrested for pedo-baptism? You pedo-baptist, you? Independent fundamentalists. Adventists, we talked a lot about that in this class. Latter-day Saints, one of the... where we're trying to restorationist movement, communal, those that live together in a covenant community, metaphysical, that's wrong, it's a Y for the U, metaphysical. Here we're getting into New Age psychic and New Age magic, and Eastern, Middle Eastern, well, there you have Judaism, there you have Islam, and there you have it. Thank you.